Hey, Mike, you know what? You know, I've been watching the Mar-a-Lago drama, and I confess my eye got off the ball a little bit this weekend. I was pretty busy. But what's all this talk about civil war and insurrection? I mean, and the FBI is a criminal enterprise. It's just too much again. You know, we're going from 0 to 60 and skipping all the intermediate gears. So what's the latest on the search of Donald Trump's place in Mar-a-Lago? What was released over the weekend? And I understand a federal magistrate may be doing some editing of documents that yet may be released some more. So tell me what you know. Tell me what the current state of play
is. It's been a bit of a tornado. So there were documents that the federal government was ordered to turn over that came back heavily redacted. And a lot of those documents were the justification.
Redacted, another lawyer term. Heavily edited. Okay. Let's you and I.
Oh, yes.
Let's make
it literally
impact.
Blacked out, though.
We're going to talk about the law in terms that ordinary people use, so that when an ordinary person goes to a lawyer's office and the lawyer says, well, this is going to have to be redacted, the person can say, do you mean edited? I'm not going to pay you for using that big word. You're going to pay me for helping you talk like a human being. So these documents, heavily edited. Move on.
Yes, heavily edited, heavily blacked out. And now there's talk, Norm, and I would defer to you on some of these more procedural moves. But there's talk now of the appointment of a special master. And the only real context I have outside of the Mar-a-Lago investigation for the appointment of a special master would have come during the Mueller probe, right, during President Trump's first term. Not sure whether this will come to pass, and I'm not totally sure what the scope of the special master's privileges and responsibilities would be, but this is turning into more and more of a mess, and it really is. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of objective information coming out.
Well,
it all seems to be still obscured in sort of that partisan bias, whether you're viewing from the vantage of a right-leaning or a conservative position or that of a left-leaning liberal position.
Well, let me tell you what I see here, and correct me if I've got something wrong. So they got the television on in the back. You know, I'm going to turn 67 in September, and let me tell you something. Things go bump in the night that I didn't even know existed before. So they've got one of these commercials on where the person says, I've fallen and I can't get up. I'm sitting here sprawled in my chair in the studio thinking, I need one of those devices. I've fallen and I can't get up. I laugh, but the time is shortly coming. So look, here's the deal. I wish they wouldn't leave this television on. I'm easily distracted, you know, as you can tell. So somebody in the Justice Department gets an idea in their mind that they need to get a search warrant for Donald Trump's home and his Mar-a-Lago office and estate and whatnot. And the standard for getting a search warrant is if there's probable cause, that is, some reason to believe that the fruits and instrumentalities of a crime are present in that location. In order to get a search warrant, a law enforcement officer has to sign an affidavit under oath, take it to a prosecutor who reviews it, and then goes to a judge and asks the judge to sign it after reviewing the document. And it's what's called a four corners review of the document. In other words, does the information within the contained in the warrant, that is the words in the affidavit, does that information give the judge reason to believe that there that in a particular place there may be specified items to be found? What we learned as this drama unfolded from Donald Trump is that federal agents raided his place. And the response was, oh, war. They've raided the man who's an election was stolen from, these evil state, deep state, blah, blah, blah. And that was just so much noise in my view. And you get the impression that Steve Bannon, Dan Bongino, this whole crowd, you know, Steve Crowder, that these guys listen to one another and they're competing for a limited market of rage and they've got to outperform one another to get the metrics up. Come on, all of you, step back. Go work for a small independent radio station and stop trying to compete to be the biggest sphincter in the room. You know, flatulence. You know, excuse my language if you're out there in the AARP cancel culture squad, fart gas. That just isn't good for anybody. Running your lips because you can doesn't help. So they search the place. Trump goes public with it because he doesn't, you know, he that's Donald's style. And then Merrick Garland, now his hands are tied because typically the documents associated with the search are confidential. And that's because we don't want to malign a person who's the target of a federal investigation. For all we know, they're innocent. But Donald went to the press. Garland went to the court and said, let me release the warrant. But he got an order doing so. But it really was another, you know, misstep by the players here. Garland didn't get the warrant released. He just got the menu at the restaurant released. Nobody could eat what he was selling. It was just a list of what they were looking for and why. So then Trump pushed back and said, we want to release the underlying affidavit. In other words, the reasons the judge authorized federal agents to search the home. So this went to a judge who, quote, edited it. I was going to say redacted, but I'm reminded of the plain English, the plain English ultimatum. I can't say that quickly. You know, so the judge edited it. And what we ended up with, at least what I see in the newspaper, are documents with sometimes whole pages and lines blacked out. But we have a little bit more information. You know, we have information that suggests that active intelligence files were with Trump, that he had them with magazines and other items of personal interest. And there's a suggestion that he ought to be arrested and that our spies were placed at risk. And, you know, even the New York Times editorial board, I don't know why I say even, maybe I should say not surprisingly, the New York Times editorial board has now called for Donald Trump's indictment and his arrest and prosecution for federal charges. Seriously, you know, this is what passes for journalism now. There are questions we want answered. So much has been edited out of what has been displayed for public view that I don't really know what he did, meaning the president, or why. The questions are important, and they should be raised, but raised by an editorial board? This is the same group that's out there peddling the 1619 project, setting the country up for reparations payments so that we can institutionalize a new form of racism? I ain't going there, guys. No, no, no. 1,000 times no. And listeners, you shouldn't either. If it looks funny, if it smells funny, if it tastes funny, spit it out. Don't look. Don't listen. Push back. If you see something, say something. That's the only way we're going to save this republic. We need a common sense party. The right and the left, they're mirror images of one another. They all went to the same bar. They all drank the same liquor. They're all intoxicated on the same noxious fumes. And we're all getting sick of bailing them out the next morning when they go on a toot and they've made a mess of the country. So I'm watching Mar-a-Lago. I'm sorry, Mike. Yeah.
Norm, and I love where you're at right now. There's you might recognize this name, Harmeet Dhillon. So
I do.
Ron Coleman, friend of the podcast, friend of the show. That is the Dhillon in the Dhillon Law Group, with whom Coleman is a partner. She has been really vocal about one aspect of this that, you know, frankly, I don't have the experience to have drawn up. But she's talking about the process by which these thousands and thousands of documents are and oftentimes needlessly marked with the classified or top secret designation, which further confuses and further obscures the truth of the inquiry into Mar-a-Lago, right? And this also looks over the fact that Trump, as the commander-in-chief, as the president, had the authority unilaterally to declassify information.
Well,
so
I hear people say that, but what does that mean? You know, I mean, does that mean that he has to jump through some administrative hoop, or does he snap his fingers and say, presto change-o? Oh, listen, that tune means that products of and services of inestimable value that you must purchase and consume is coming. Mike, stick around. We'll be back after the break. This is WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, WICC600.com if you're live streaming. So Mike Boyer and I are trying to decipher what's going on down at Mar-a-Lago and give you some goalposts that you can rely on, as opposed to the hysterical chatter that is coming both from the right and the left. You know, from the left, we've got the anonymous nitwits on the New York Times editorial board calling for the indictment of Donald Trump. What better way to put a stake in the heart of those who won't support their agenda, the 1619 Project and whatnot? And then from the right, we've got the likes of Dan Bongino and company basically saying all bets are off. This is a new Lexington and Concord. Folks, it's neither. These are cops, judges, lawyers trying to do their job. And if you're committed to the proposition that no one is above the law, all right, then let's see where this leads. But don't go reach and leap into conclusions. You know, thus far, we've taken you through at various points today and other days the fact that there was a dispute between Trump and the National Archives about whether he walked off with documents belonging to the federal government. That led to negotiations between the National Archives lawyers and lawyers for Donald Trump. Items were returned, and the lawyers apparently, according to what I've read at least, said that all the documents had been returned. Somebody at Mar-a-Lago and close to the president, or more than one somebody, we don't know, those were names that have been edited out, what's been released, called in and said, nah, there's more stuff here. So the FBI went to a judge with an affidavit, is swearing under oath by witnesses, material they had learned in the course of the investigation. The judge gave them permission to enter Trump's house. Trump made that a public issue. Merrick Garland responded by releasing just the face page of the warrant. Then there was a dispute about what more could be released, and now we have partial disclosure. Garland saying, I can't give it all to you. That would compromise our means and place our witnesses at risk. Trump saying, no, let the public know. Now, that's where we stand today. Now, today we learn that there's a claim that among the documents seized from Trump's home are documents between he and his lawyers. This is deeply troubling. The attorney-client privilege means that your communications with your lawyer are privileged. No one can get at them absent an order of the judge. And in order to show that, you'd have to show something like the two of you planned and sought to execute a crime, you and your lawyer. That's the so-called crime fraud exception to the attorney-client privilege. You make that application to a judge with another affidavit. Right now, though, apparently from Trump land, there is a claim that when agents seized documents that they were authorized to look for, they also took documents in the vicinity which were confidential communications between he and his lawyers. So how do you go about solving that? This is where the special master comes in. Now, if you look at the judicial branch of the government, and we've talked before about the separation of powers and the fact that our government, at least at the federal level, is divided into three separate branches. Executive, that is the president and those reporting to him in various agencies. The judiciary, the judges and whatnot. The judges. Let me not beg the question with the whatnot. That was a cheap move. You're better than that. I owe you better than that. And then the legislature. Now, the judicial branch has judges that are appointed for life. These are called Article III judges because Article III in the United States Constitution guarantees their appointment for life. There can be other officers appointed, some by Congress. These are magistrates. They sit for 8-year terms. A federal bankruptcy judge sits for a 12-year term. The judiciary can also appoint officers to assist them in their work. These are so-called special masters. They're usually senior lawyers or lawyers who are otherwise deemed trustworthy by the court, or maybe even retired judges. Yours truly, I was a special master in the courts for 2 or 3 years, 15, 20 years ago, where I helped try to solve civil cases. A federal judge would send them over and I'd meet with the parties. In the end, I got out of that business because I'm about as quasi-judicial as I am quasi-divine. It's just not a role that I was built to play. And it was interfering with the practice of law and my enjoyment of life. The last thing I want to do is sit around pretending I'm an authority figure on one thing or another. I got issues with authority. I've already got issues with myself. I didn't need those, too. In the Trump case, the special master is going to be assigned the task of going through the documents that the FBI pulled from Trump's home and going through them to pull out or cull, take out those items that are privileged, those communications with his lawyer, because the FBI is not entitled to have them. And that process will take some time. Query, though, and this is the million-dollar question, this is what's on everybody's mind right now, is Trump going to be arrested? Is Trump going to be arrested and hauled into court as a criminal? And the answer is, I don't think so. And I don't think so because I think that would blow the roof off the Justice Department. You know, within the Justice Department, which is the agency housing federal prosecutors and the FBI, there are manuals that govern how the agency uses its discretion. And the manuals dictate that with respect to a public official, that person, there should neither be a search of their home nor an enforcement action, an arrest, that is, that might have an impact on a forthcoming election. How in the world could anyone conceive of an enforcement action against Trump right now that would not be perceived by a significant portion of the country as anything other than an attempt to influence the election? And, you know, and let's face it, that's why the New York Times, you know, wants Donald Trump elected. They didn't sprout a newfound sense of sanctity for American law. I've yet to see them call for the arrest of one BLM rioter. And they endorsed Kamala Harris, who was giving bond money to people who burn buildings down in cities so that they could be released, presumably to go out and burn other buildings down or burn the same things down all over again. So let's not pretend that the New York Times has suddenly discovered virtue. But my view is Merrick Garland should not call for the arrest of Donald Trump. Donald Trump remains a divisive figure in American politics. He remains a figure many people are prepared to vote for. Let the voters decide what to do. Don't let federal prosecutors remove a person from eligibility from office. That you want to talk about a coup, you want to talk about a profoundly delegitimizing move. That would stun me, you know, because I think the appeal of Donald, and you know, I got to confess, this is the appeal that he has to me. I've told you before that when he was. When Hillary called his supporters deplorable, there was probably that moment she locked in my vote, but not for her, but for him. And when he stands up to groups like the New York Times and these other woke members of the mafia who are so persuaded by their version of virtue that they're prepared to cram it down my throat, whether I like it or not, I'm standing with the guy who's got his middle finger raised and prepared to slap him in the face. And if that's Donald Trump, so be it. And I don't like being put in that position. Hey, Kurt from Bridgeport, you know, I'm off on it.
How are you today, Norm?
Well, I'm wild. Haven't you noticed? How are you?
I'm pretty well. I'm fighting a municipality locally, and you were almost my lawyer on this before.
Uh-oh. Well, you know, I remind you of the attorney-client privilege.
Fine. Yeah. We didn't go that far. So.
Okay.
Question, though, in regards to this. This is a Frank's hearing kind of thing that's going on with the Trump warrant.
So a Frank's hearing, let me tell the listeners what that is. Remember moments ago, folks, when I said that a warrant is evaluated by a reviewing magistrate within its four corners. That I chose that term deliberately because I suspected somebody like Kurt was going to call in. Within the four corners of the warrant, a magistrate is to assume that the facts testified to under oath are true. And he's to assume that the officers filling it out operated in good faith. In a Frank's analysis, a person challenging a warrant can say, look, the officer knowingly lied and included something in the warrant that was a fact that he knew not to be true, and that fact matters. Take out that fact, and the warrant wouldn't have been signed. That is an error of commission. There are also errors of omission. Within that four corners analysis of the warrant, you can say there are things that the officer knew but didn't put in here, which if included would have undermined probable cause. So what's an error of omission? You say, I robbed. Oh, I can't remember the name of that story with the fantastic donuts, you know, but you knew six witnesses said I was in Toledo that weekend. You don't put that in the warrant. Maybe it wouldn't get signed. An error of commission might be saying you got my fingerprints off of the donut maker when you didn't. And so I'm not sure we're at a Frank's stage yet. Kurt, why do you think we are? I know that Trump has sued some of the officers, but
My question, to the meat of the question, didn't get out. So my question really is, and you kind of hit it with some key words there, may I use a Frank's hearing on arrest warrants as well?
Yes. So, yes, anytime. So the Fourth Amendment guarantees that we, the people, have a right, a fundamental constitutional right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, and that no arrest or no search shall authorize but by probable cause. If you have an arrest warrant that says you were observed at the scene, but the officer's lying about that, you should demand a Frank's hearing, yes.
That is awesome. But and as far as Trump's goes, I think, we're heading down that route. What do you feel?
Which route?
The Frank's hearing.
You know, I don't know enough. I saw that he sued, and I thought that was a stupid idea. It's premature to sue on this record. He can't possibly know enough, and police officers generally enjoyed what is known as qualified immunity. That is, you can't sue them, and you'd need to know a whole lot more. I thought his lawsuit was a sort of stupid PR stunt, and he should have saved himself some money. I don't know where we're headed with this.
1983 land.
Or 84, yeah. No, I mean, the country, I'm really worried. I'm worried because of my own reaction. You know, I don't think of Trump as executive branch material. He's not the, I wouldn't trust him with my checkbook. If my mother were still living and dating and she brought him home, I wouldn't have him to dinner. But yet, as opposed to Biden and Harris, if I had to choose right now, I'd choose him. And I don't know what it is about my level of disaffection and alienation from what's going on in the country that makes him look like an appealing candidate. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Trump is a canary in the mineshaft of American politics. Those who seek to silence him are ignoring the mineshaft. There's something fundamentally broken and wrong in the country right now, and my attitudes are a reflection of them. And by attacking Trump, we're not addressing that. And I'm begging for a politician to take the center ground and talk common sense so that people on the right and the left can come together and talk about common interests. I just don't see it. I just don't see it, Kurt.
I can't agree with you 100% more. That center ground is what we need, a little of both. And then you've been, you know, eloquent as always, and I much appreciate you taking my call, and it's been a pleasure.
Call anytime, Kurt. It's great to hear from you. You're listening to WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, WICC600.com if you're live streaming. Call in. Rant at me. I'm ranting at you, 203-333-WICC. Hey, we've got calls stacked up here, Mike, so I'm going to take those and pretend you don't exist. How's that? Mike, are you still there?
It works for me, man.
Chime in anytime. Help advance the ball. You know how I get going. I'm a dog with a bone, and sometimes that bone chokes me, and I still think it tastes good. Hey, Ken from Bridgeport. Thanks for holding on. What's up?
Hey, Norm, how's it going? Welcome back.
Thanks.
Hey, this Mar-a-Lago stuff, you think they're just doing it to Trump because they may think that he's possibly going to run again just to try to find some kind of dirt on him just to get him out of the running for president again if he decides to run?
You know, that's the easy thing. But, you know, and so, yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure that somewhere deep in the bowels of the Department of Justice, right up there with the Preparation H, you know, that, you know, I mean, I'm sure that that's on somebody's mind, because the narrative that Donald Trump is a fascist and he's going to destroy the country and he's an existential threat, you know, that's so common out there. And when you've got the New York Times saying arrest him, there are going to be ambitious guys that say, yeah, I could run for office on this. In fact, one of the special prosecutors in the January 6th committee was just elected to the New York General Assembly. So there's political hay to be made here. But I want to say, you know, this is going to sound really naive, Ken, given the way I run my mouth, but I still trust the system. I still think that checks and balances work. And I think the greatest protection for our civil liberties is a ferocious contest between both sides in any dispute where a neutral and detached magistrate decides it. So I just don't know enough. I think that Donald is just a little bit self-aggrandizing. And, you know, he was the one who ran to the press and made an issue of this. And deflection is the key, you know. I mean, Donald here, I've never been in Donald Trump's presence, but I'm imagining him coming home after a dalliance with another woman and his wife, whether it be 1, 2, 3 or however many he's had. Is that someone else's perfume I smell on you? And, of course, the correct answer is yes, in which case he's trouble. Well, you wouldn't kiss me. What did you expect me to do? You know, in Trump's land, it's always the other guy's fault. So do I think that's a motive? Yeah. But do I think it's time to reach conclusions? No. Let this thing play out, you know?
Well, Norm, yeah, just to honor the question maybe, a little bit more.
Which one?
Okay. Yeah, maybe Melania should run for president.
What's that?
Maybe Melania should run for president.
Oh, yeah. Can you see that? But she wasn't born here, so we'd have to amend the Constitution to permit a non-natural born citizen to do it, and then she'd get on the stand.
Yeah.
You know, if Barack can do it, I can do it too. It's time to put someone hot in the White House, you know. And then she'd go strutting away in those Christian Dior outfits with her whatever heels on, and half the guys in the country would be saying, Melania, Melania, whatever you want. That's how she captured Donald, isn't it? I mean, let's be real here. I know we're supposed to talk about high crimes and misdemeanors, but, you know, you come home from a hard day at the office and Jill Biden is in one room and Melania Trump's in the other. Who's going to see Jill? You know, I mean, I know the ASPCA is a great organization, but let's be real. Hey, Ken, I'm going to take the next caller, all right? Thanks for calling, buddy. Bob Trumbull, what's
Norm,
up?
Norm, before you...
Yeah, Mike.
Just to advance that last question and honor, I think, the direction it was coming from, you know, I would point out that none of this stuff really exists in a vacuum with respect to Trump. I mean, we don't have to relitigate all the various actions against him and whether they turned out to be a hoax or not. So that's
on the one hand, this seems to be a continuation of, you know, federal resources allocated to investigations of Trump's every move, which may validate the question to begin with, right? At some point, the pattern develops enough that people can start to suspect ill-advised motives. Second, you know, Trump underwrites a lot of state representative candidates for House and Senate, or, you know, federal House of Representatives, federal Senate candidates, state to state, and we've got midterm elections coming up. There are a lot of people who have been criticizing this move on Mar-a-Lago to, I guess, ease the momentum with the red wave coming in 2022.
I hear you. You know, and the politics of it matter a lot, and there's a lot of energy to be had here, as the papers show. I just would like everybody to calm down a minute, you know, a red hot minute, and see what the facts yield. You know, so hey,
who's on the phone?
We got Bob from Trumbull. Bob, what up, buddy?
Dude, I know how the President Trump feels about this search warrant, because about 15 years ago, I got raided by.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane of what they can do to get a warrant. I mean, it was the resident trooper in Woodbury was getting Lewinsky's from my nieces.
What's a Lewinsky?
That's that thing.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Are you saying that there were some?
Nor, come on, man!
No!
I get it.
I mean,
this is
true. Wow!
This is absolutely true. Brother was died, quote, in a motorcycle accident. Of course, his wife at the time bragged about she got him multiple drug prescriptions, and he had been straight for 20 years. But anyway, these guys, when they came, because I was a gun collector, and they lied like hell, and they were dumb enough, when they left their box with all of the documents, and I read it, and I go, this is Bolshevik. I even got a call from the state representative from Woodbury saying, dude, you're screwed.
No, he didn't say that. He said, dude, you have problems of an inestimable value.
No, yeah. He
didn't use
me.
That word. This is family radio.
Yeah, he did. He said, you're screwed.
Oh, come on now. Okay, I got
that. Yeah, he was the state rep. So I know how he feels about this. It's insanity.
So this is where
Will just take the word. Because I read the thing where it said, "Oh, is it the oh God?"
Here's a funny story.
Know
about
the people.
Here's a funny story. I mean, I know. I mean, I'm sorry. It sounds
insane.
Like it was difficult. It's an insider's world. But let me try. Let me teach. Okay, Bob. Let's not litigate this issue. It's 15 years old. I get it. Cops can be corrupt, and judges are prepared to sign off on anything. And you've heard the old expression, a federal prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. Here's a funny story, and you're right, and here's how I know you're right, Bob. Because if a cop walks in with a warrant, and the judge has signed one 15, 20 times for this guy before, he's going to read it and say, I've seen this guy before. I know he's trustworthy. So if that guy wants to slip one past the judge for the most venal of reasons he can, funny story. There is a little-known state statute that permits any two credible persons to walk into a judge's chambers with an affidavit to request a search warrant. You can do it yourself with one of your neighbors. So you got to get into a judge's chambers, and then he has to determine that you're credible. And if there's probable cause to believe that there's a right to search, you can do it. So in a criminal case, once we needed something that the state wouldn't give us, and my partner and I signed the affidavit, and we went in to see a judge, and he said, well, it says here two credible people. And I'm like, seriously, judge? Joe Blow cop can walk in here and you're going to pretend I'm not after all the years that I've been appearing in front of you? So he ended up signing the warrant. But it illustrates the point you're trying to prove, Bob, and that is in the dark night of the soul, a liar can get away with anything. And it sounds like you got hurt. I'm sorry. Are you okay now?
I got hurt.
Are you okay now?
No, actually, I never financially recovered.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
With the amount I had a gun that was carried with I had Providence. It was carried in the U.S.-Mexican War. It was one of the original things.
And where's that gun today?
No, it's in the safe. But they broke it. They broke the grips. It can't be replaced.
All right, listen, Bob. I want to give it to a museum. Bob. I can't help you with that. You've made the point, that a bad cop can lie to an incredulous judge and destroy something of value for a person. Thanks for calling in.